Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
It's not a call per se, but a group of First Nations as well as commercial fishers pushing the federal government to relax restrictions on seal hunting. That would allow them to harvest seal meat. It could be sold after that in places like restaurants. The Pacific Balance Pinniped Society, pinniped is just a scientific word for an animal similar to a seal or a sea lion, wants to see First Nations along the BC coast awarded the ability to kill seals and sea lions for commercial sale. Group's founder spoke with CTV News, says he sees a business opportunity for the proposal, as well as, and this is what makes this interesting, an environmental benefit. It says on the business side, a West Coast commercial seal hunt could employ as many as 4,000 people. On the ecological front, says that it would restore what is being called a historic balance by drastically reducing the number of harbor seals off the BC coast. Provincial statistics show that the harbor seal population right now is above 100,000 animals. That's 10 times what it was in the 1970s. That is a 900% increase since then. I want to bring Misty McDuffie on to share her perspective on this, because we have talked about the issue of the seals in the past in terms of them eating the salmon and whether or not that ought to be a concern. Misty McDuffie, thank you for your time. Good morning, as always.
Good morning, Adam.
So I want to get your thoughts on this particular story. I know that there's different elements here. One of them has to do with First Nations fishing rights. I'm more interested in your thoughts on the environmental purported benefits of a seal hunt. What do you think?
Okay, so yeah, and I think it's really important to distinguish those two things. If, you know, if First Nations want to pursue a traditional harvesting of seals because they want to eat them or they think there's a commercial market for them, that's a separate discussion from the one about whether it would have that environmental benefit overall. And that's where things really, you know, become questionable because, well, for a few reasons. One is that food webs are complex, and when we think that we can remove a predator because we assume that they're having an impact, it often backfires. And one of the most recent backfires just in the news in the last few days
yes.
is trying to remove the double-crested cormorants from the lower Columbia River, and it was such a disaster after destroying 6,000 nests and killing more than 5,000 birds that the colony fled, and they left from the mouth of the Columbia further upriver, where now their diet has a much higher percentage of juvenile salmon than it did when they were in the lower river. So
we made it worse.
They made it worse.
Oh.
So if we just looking, so that's an example of when humans come in and think that we understand dynamics and we go to, you know, play the role of removing what we call a predator. So if we're looking at the Salish Sea, I want to put some things in context.
Sure.
So
yeah.
the population stabilized around 2000. So for the last 15 years or so, the population has not been growing.
Okay.
And there's some evidence, like depending on when they do the surveys, that, you know, sometimes it's been stabilizing in those 15 years, but the last couple of surveys suggest that it was, you know, that those numbers were slightly lower. But what has happened since the harbor seal population recovered, and so when we're talking about since the 1970, the context for that is that on this coast we killed 50,000 sea lions and 500,000 seals on the coast up until the 1970s. So we really decimated that population. So when we're talking about these you know, ninefold increases, it's recovery back to what was likely historic levels. And at some point in the past, the killer whales, the seals and the sea lions, all and humans and First Nations all successfully survived on, you know, Chinook and other salmon in the Salish Sea together. So if we go way back in the past, the Salish Sea obviously supported the presence of southern residents and the pinnipeds.
Here's a question I think many people will have on their minds. If the absence of salmon to eat is what's behind the southern resident killer whale population's precipitous decline, and pinnipeds, seals, and sea lions rely on the same sorts of salmon, which have, as we just mentioned, precipitously dropped, then how is the seal population growing? Why isn't it shrinking too?
Right, because seals have only a small percentage of their diet is actually Chinook salmon.
I see. All right.
And so if we say, you know, it's less than 10% that would be, you know, total salmon. And that's, you know, they have higher predation in the fall. But most of their predation on salmon is actually chum salmon, not Chinook salmon.
Okay.
And a lot of what seals are eating is hake. And that's a strong percentage of their diet. And hake also eat juvenile salmon. So again, in thinking that we could remove that one predator and that there would that it would just improve the Chinook abundance, the food web dynamics don't necessarily move in those straight lines. And so if the seal population dropped enough that was substantial, mm-hmm. you know, we may have more hake, which would then eat the juvenile salmon. But the other thing that's happened is that we've seen this increase in the mammal eating killer whales. Those bigs or transient killer whales have really increased in their numbers and their frequency in the Salish Sea over the last 30 years with this recovery of the seal population. And it's likely that those transient bigs killer whales are eating more seals than we would kill anyways in a cull if we were to try to do that. And so if we start removing the prey of the whales that are actually probably maybe doing their job to push the population down right now, again, we may simply destabilize things. And the best predator and most effective predator on seals and sea lions are those bigs, mammal-eating killer whales.
Well, except for us, of course, human beings. We kill things by accident.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And all of this is really predicated on the fact that humans are entitled to those Chinook salmon, and therefore anything else that also eats them, we want to diminish their numbers.
So if we kill the seals to try to make sure the southern resident killer whales don't starve, we might accidentally starve the transient killer whales because they eat the seals.
Yeah, well, we would push them out, and there's evidence that in the summer, the whales that we're seeing, the mammal-eating transient killer whales that we're seeing may be coming from long ways away. Mm. That there are whales that they know because, you know, we do sort of know with transients, we don't have the same level of detail as the southern resident killer whales, but we know all the family groups and we know individual whales. And they've tracked whales that were up in southeast Alaska, you know, making a 1,000-mile migration down to the Salish Sea to, you know, to munch on pinnipeds, you know, when the pupping seasons are on.
So, I see.
So we are pulling in killer whales from across the coast. And overall, the transient population on the coast has grown. So we're seeing more of those family groups, those matrilines in the Salish Sea. We're seeing it at more times of the year. And the overall population, we're seeing calves now being born in the Salish Sea. So transient killer whales are really coming from all over the coast to feed in the Salish Sea, and they are likely the most effective predator if we're concerned if there's a desire to lower the seal numbers.
Let's take a quick break. Misty McDuffie is Wild Salmon Program Director with the Raincoast Conservation Foundation. Again, I want to be very clear for the benefit of our audience. There are two distinct issues. If indeed First Nations would like to exercise their constitutionally protected rights, it's Section 35 of the Constitution Act, by the way, their constitutionally protected rights regarding hunting and fishing, and indeed that extends to a seal fishing expedition or a hunt, so to speak, and that's not what we're discussing today. What we're discussing are the claims that it would also have a side effect benefit of helping the environment because there'd be fewer seals eating all of the Chinook salmon. We know there aren't many Chinook salmon left. They have declined drastically in recent years for any number of reasons, including human beings fishing them, including dams on the rivers south of us, the Americans, as well as climate change, the blob. There's any number of different factors that are all hitting them from different directions. Bottom line is the Chinook salmon are in big trouble right now. Would getting rid of the seals help? Our guest says, nah, it's not quite so simple. We'll continue the conversation after this.
keeping you informed. Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Two separate issues. First Nations constitutional rights. I will leave that to the lawyers and the courts to decide. We are exploring the environmental question about whether opening up a seal hunt here on the west coast of Canada, not a cull, we're not killing them just to kill them. The meat would be harvested. It would be commercially produced. It would be sold. You'd be able to eat it in restaurants, maybe buy it at the grocery store. Who knows? There's a new group called the Pacific Balance Pinniped Society making that proposal. Our guest Misty McDuffie has concerns, though. She's the Wild Salmon Program Director at the Raincoast Conservation Foundation, as to whether or not it would actually restore historical balance by drastically reducing the number of harbor seals off the BC coast. Now, Misty McDuffie, you told us earlier in this conversation that while it is true that the population is about 10 times what it was in the 1970s, it's not still growing. The population stabilized by itself, you said, around the year 2000?
Yep, around 2000. And I would call that a recovery, that, okay. That whole, characterize that whole period over the last 40 years as a recovery of seals in the Salish Sea, given that we did call them, we did hunt them up until the 1970s.
Well, they and the orcas were seen as nuisance animals for a long time. They were seen as interfering and otherwise just making life hard for the fishermen here, and so they'd shoot them when they got the chance, right?
Absolutely, and it didn't stop there. That's why we no longer have basking sharks on this coast anymore, was because, you know, between DFO and fishermen, they were, you know, cutting them in half and decimated a population of basking sharks that they thought were eating salmon, but basking sharks do not eat salmon.
Now, in terms of imagining an imbalance, I assume that you would take the position that it is possible for a lack of predation or a lack of pressures to cause an imbalance in an ecosystem. Your position is that we do not see an imbalance right here in terms of harbor seals, that rather they have been restored to their historic levels. What would it look like, or what would we look for if there was an imbalance? What would be the telltale sign for you? What would be different?
Well, I think that the lack of pinnipeds and seals in the 1970s did facilitate a higher survival of Chinook salmon. So, I mean, I'm not saying that there's not an effect that these animals would have. They do play a role just because of their sheer numbers.
Yes.
So harvests were higher then, and we caught a lot more Chinook salmon. And as humans and fishermen people, we became to expect that we would be able to harvest that level of salmon. But our harvest rates as a single predator are way out of line with what, you know, many natural, you know, predation levels are. So I think that it has to push us back in line with being just one of many predators that would like to eat these fish, and we don't have a disproportionate right to a certain amount of salmon.
It's an interesting philosophical question about what right different species on this planet have to what resource. We're used to talking about rights in terms of human beings, in terms of our access to the necessities of life. When it's extended to other animals that compete with us in an ecosystem, things get pretty cloudy pretty fast, don't they?
They do, and this is really the heart of some of these issues around the recovery of southern resident killer whales is that if we're going to address the factors that are contributing to their lack of recovery, it means curtailing our own behavior.
250-386-1161 *1070. Let's go to Don. Don, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Adam, and thank you. I think your guests and I agree. I'm just going to hopefully create a little more depth to the subject. The wild salmon right now in British Columbia is job one. And I think the federal government and our provincial government are inept. I think all governance, when it comes to wild resources, have demonstrated over the last 100 years they are not the people that should be in charge. They continually come up failing the public and the resource itself. The nature, once you touch it, it's like a domino effect. Now, the NDP government, they've looked at the farm fish issue right
mm-hmm.
now.
Yeah.
And my understanding of their policy is the farms will not lose 1 gram of production. They may need to move their farms, but they are, if they have the blessing where they're going, they will continue at least at the production they are. farm salmon are not helpful to the wild salmon, period. I think the last court case a few days ago demonstrated that there are viruses that are killing our fish. So, and I think your guest and I could agree, once we remove the cougars, say from Oak Bay and Saanich and View Royal and Central Saanich and so on and so forth, deer greatly increase their populations. That's a given. If we keep our domestic cats inside our homes, the wild bird populations do far better when those predators are removed from that that environment. Now, seals, the population, can well afford a cull. I'm not suggesting I agree with it, but their populations are such right now, they can afford the cull. It's all hands on deck to try and create more Chinook salmon to maturity so they can continue breeding and so on and so forth. So how can that be wrong? I would, as far as eating the seals, I personally would give it a go. I don't see why I wouldn't. And the cull, maybe your guest could comment on this, should be focused on the river mouse. She demonstrated or she spoke of their eating hake. Well, that may or may not be. I'm not going to argue that point. But the seals at the river mouse aren't. They're feasting on the the young salmon that are trying to get their way out into the open ocean. So I guess I'll leave it with a question. Would she support a cull at the river mouse? And if not, then what she is saying is it's true, but it's certainly not helping out, the wild salmon at least get a start to what they're trying to do.
Don, thanks for the call. Thanks for the thoughts. Mr. McDuffie, your thoughts on what that caller had to say.
Yeah, good question. Okay, so the first thing I want to do is distinguish between a cull and a harvest.
All right.
So if First Nations were given a go-ahead, or if it was decided that we wanted a fishery on seals on this coast, that we would determine the level of seals that could be removed without having population-level impacts, right? That's the idea of what our harvest and our management plans are supposed to do, is be able to remove from a population without causing an impact on that population.
Like, you're supposed to be able to do it forever, and it will replenish itself, ideally.
In an ideal scenario, you're not having a population-level impact, exactly.
Okay.
The objective of a cull is to have a population level impact.
That's a very good point. That's an excellent point.
So that what you're trying to do is to reduce those numbers to a level where they're not going to have what we believe is the intended consequence. So now I do agree that the problem is likely occurring in the places where we have more evidence for the impact that seals are having is in the mouths of rivers in the fall on returning salmon.
Yes.
And part of the reason that, if you look at the Cowichan and some of the places on Vancouver Island where they're having those impacts is because humans have created infrastructure that allows those animals to haul out on infrastructure where no predators can get to them, like log booms, like jetties. So we've created an infrastructure that lets them haul out, and they have to be able to haul out. So I would say in the places where we have evidence that we think that seals are causing a disproportionate impact on returning, say, Chinook, that we need to take a deeper dive, and we need to say, okay, why it is, do we have evidence? What's the reason that they're able to congregate? Can we address the infrastructure issue? And if we sort of keep going down that road and we really have evidence and we're not going to address infrastructure, but I still think that that's the first thing we need to do, then I think that we could have a dialogue about whether removal at specific locations is going to have an effect. But we really have to factor in a whole lot of things when we have that discussion.
You mentioned they have to haul out. What does that mean? Do they need space to eat the fish, or
where they can't be predated by land animals?
Okay.
Dogs aren't going to get to them, or historically, where wolves or other cougars, other predators couldn't get to them. So when you see seals and sea lions out of the water, they're on places where a human or another terrestrial animal can't get to them.
Yeah, because they're not very fast out of the water. We've all seen them sort of flop around. If it becomes a race, the dog's going to win or the wolf's going
to
win.
It's got to be a really safe place where they know that nothing can get to them. And so, we've created, like on the Fraser Estuary, we've got jetties and the population of California sea lions along those jetties in the spring. And And I mean, we see them also. I work in the Fraser Estuary, so when we leave out of the South Arm, there's an area where there's a really dense concentration of harbor seals, and they're there because historically, like going back, you know, a couple hundred years, that would not have been a safe place for them to be able to get to safely lie out of the water. But so, now it is, because there's no predators, or there's no land predators around there anymore. So they can pull out on land and they can feel safe because nothing can get to them.
Now, if we started harvesting them from just those areas, are they smart enough to figure out don't go over there because they're going to harvest you?
They're not dumb animals, so if all of a sudden there was a presence, even a dog, in some of these places, they wouldn't have safe haulouts, and over time they would probably move along.
Okay. Mr. McDuffie, we're going to continue with open lines after the break. You're a busy person, though. We'll let you get back to work. Any final thoughts for now?
Well, I think it's a good discussion to have, because there is an impression out there about the impact that these animals are having, and I think that the more information we can get out there and have a discussion about where, if there are specific areas where we think they may be having an effect, then let's have that discussion. But at a broad level of a cull, there just isn't any evidence that it would be beneficial.
Mr. McDuffie, Wild Salmon Program Director, Rain Coast Conservation Foundation, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Take care. Bye now. Always welcome guest here on the CFAX 1070 airwaves, Mr. McDuffie. I know not all the viewpoints out there agree with the official position of the Rain Coast Conservation Foundation. That's all right. I've got a commercial fisherman standing by on the phone lines right now. We're doing open lines on this topic after the news break. 250-386-1161. Your chance to weigh in as well. What do you think of what you just heard? I think the key point for me to take away from that conversation is recognizing the difference between a cull and a harvest. The purpose of a cull is to reduce the population numbers of that animal. Ideally, a harvest should not materially impact the numbers of that population over time, because you want it to be infinitely repeatable in terms of harvesting that animal. Quick break. News is now.